This is Liberation Radio.
Capitalism needs poverty.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
Whatever we could do, we're gonna do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth.
Each week, we bring you interviews, commentary, analysis, political developments, and struggles affecting workers throughout the country as a way to build the movement for socialism in the United States.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The only thing that will ever defeat racism will be the defeat of its parents, capitalism and imperialism.
Without smashing mass incarceration, working people of all nationalities cannot have justice.
Liberation Radio is brought to you by the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Welcome to Liberation Radio. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. On this episode, we discuss the ongoing movement against police terror and the recent actions by the New York Police Department to publicly stand against New York Mayor Bill de Blasio. We discuss President Obama's year-end quarterly report on the economy and what workers can expect in 2015. But first, we have on Walter Smolarek with the PSL in Philadelphia and a contributing writer for Liberation News discussing the upcoming Greek elections and the significance of the possibility of Syriza, the coalition of the radical left, winning these elections. So the elections in Greece are happening at a time of great turmoil there. Can you give a brief overview of the situation, particularly as in regards to the economy and how it affects politics?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Greek economy has been devastated during the ongoing economic crisis. So in 2009, there's a major collapse of the Greek economy, partially because the government was in an incredible amount of debt. And as a result, the Troika was set up, which consists of the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. And in return for bailing out the Greek banks and other major corporations, the Greek government agreed to what's referred to as the memorandum, which is basically an agreement to impose devastating austerity measures on poor and working people in Greece. And so that includes things like slashing pensions, raising the retirement age, lowering the minimum wage, deregulating industry, privatizing public companies. So it's basically just a general offensive against the working class in Greece. So there have been two bailouts and two memorandums, and the second memorandum is supposed to be coming to an end. The bailout money is distributed in a series of installments, and the final installment has yet to be paid because the Greek government was still in the middle of negotiations with the Troika about how to extend the bailout program or to have some sort of supplementary monitoring program. So that's all sort of hanging over the Greek government's head. And now they have to head into early elections on January 25th. And that's because the Parliament of Greece failed to elect a replacement for the current president, who's retiring. The president is largely a ceremonial role in Greece, but the constitution mandates that he be elected with 180 votes, so out of 300 in the parliament. So while the government had a majority in parliament, they did not have enough to elect a new president. Mm.
So Syriza is widely expected to win these elections. Can you say more about who they are?
Yeah, so Syriza is the coalition of the radical left. Before the 2012 parliamentary elections, they were a relatively small party. It was actually composed of several different parties. One of the major components was what we call like a Euro-communist split from the Communist Party of Greece, which at the time was much larger. There were also several other leftists parties involved in that, a lot from like the Trotskyist or Maoist traditions. And so after seemingly coming out of nowhere to get second place in 2012, they've begun to develop a more unitary structure. And part of this process, under the leadership of Alexis Tsipras, the name of the party leader, the Syriza has been moving very rapidly to the right. in recent months and years. So while they originally ran on the platform of, you know, they would say, like, we're going to tear up the memorandum, you know, cancel all the austerity measures. And they also campaigned for what they called, like, a government of the left, which, you know, all the parties to the left of the traditional Social Democratic Party, which is called CASOC in Greece. Now the core of their platform is what they call a European Bed Conference, which is going to be theoretically accompanied by a European New Deal. So basically the idea is that the imperialist states that compose the Eurozone would get together and agree to forgive a large amount of Greece's debt. And then at the same time, they would invest hundreds of billions of dollars into, you know, basically like what the New Deal was in the United States, massive infrastructure programs, things to stimulate demand and, you know, just general investment in the economy. So, one, this is, I mean, it's an extremely unlikely scenario, given the resistance that would likely come from Germany and other powerful imperialist states in the Eurozone. And also, it's fundamentally a social democratic program, right? Mm-hmm. The emphasis that all the Syriza leaders have been giving in the run-up to the election is that, one, we won't make any unilateral moves. Right, all of this is going to be negotiated with the Troika, with the European Union. And two, that this is good for both capitalists and workers. That, you know, public investment would kickstart growth in the economy, and that would allow austerity measures to be lifted and also for capitalist firms to return to profitability. So they really lost whatever revolutionary politics that they have had.
And are there any other strong leftist parties in Greece, and how does their strategy intersect with Syriza?
Well, the other large leftist party is the Communist Party of Greece. So they have, you know, a very large base in the working class that goes back decades and decades. And their strategy is what they call constructing a people's alliance. And a people's alliance is basically, you know, a block in society of the oppressed classes and the middle elements to, you know, small business people, farmers, you know, people who may not be traditionally thought of as, like, the most oppressed layers of the proletariat, but who still have an interest in fighting against monopoly capital. So they hope to, in, you know, outside of parliament, to build this people's alliance as the revolutionary force in society. And they also intervene in the elections, calling for the socialization of all major industry, and, you know, basically the core of their program is the socialist transformation of society. However, they're not polling anywhere near what Syriza is, and they've unfortunately been unable to achieve a breakthrough in either the mass movement or the electoral arena. So they've been, you know, very sharply criticizing Syriza's strategy, but it remains to be seen how effectively they'll be able to win over large numbers of oppressed people in Greece and organize for revolution.
So if Syriza wins later this month, what are some other likely outcomes in addition to what you spoke about earlier?
Well, I think that the established powers in the European Union and the Eurozone will be extremely concerned about it, even though, you know, Syriza is really backed off from its most radical policies. They'd much prefer the current government, which is a coalition between New Democracy and PASOK, the sort of misnamed Pan-Hellenic Socialist Movement, which split into like a million pieces before the election. So, you know, while both say that they're totally committed to keeping Greece in the single currency area, you know, the group of, I believe, 17 countries that use the euro currency, Syriza is more of an unknown factor, and so, like, for example, when the parliament failed to elect a president, the Greek stock market, like, totally crashed, the bond market crashed as well, and I think we'll see sort of an initial period of panic on the part of the capitalist classes of Europe, although that may calm down once if Syriza makes it clear that they're willing to make significant compromises with the Troika. So it looks like the most serious period of confrontation, if there is a period of confrontation, would be over the summer, which is when over $11 billion of Greek debt becomes due. And without support from either the Troika with the bailout installments or without the ability to raise money from the market by issuing bonds, it would be very difficult for the Greek government to pay that back. So, of course, the people's struggle will continue. I think that the streets of victory would actually have a very disorienting effect on the mass movement, because it may appear that, you know, through purely electoral means, it's possible to win justice and liberation. But, you know, that may not last very long. So, you know, we could see a period of heightened tensions. We could also see a period of compromise and disorientation.
Walter is a member of the Philadelphia branch of the PSL, and make sure you check out our ongoing analysis of the Greek elections in the coming weeks at liberationnews.org. You're tuned in to Liberation Radio, and you can check out our website, liberationradio.org, on Facebook at facebook.com/liberationradioshow, and on Twitter at the handle Liberation Radio. Next, we speak with Carla Reyes, organizer with the Answer Coalition in New York City. She tells us about the current actions taking place in New York City against police terror, and she analyzes the meaning of the NYPD's protests against Mayor Bill de Blasio. Okay, Carla, can you talk about what happened on December 23rd, why the Answer Coalition was so determined to go into the streets despite the attempts to hold back protests?
Yeah, so the mayor put out a call for people to basically suspend their the ability to exercise their free speech in the streets through protests, because these two cops were murdered in Brooklyn by an individual who was troubled, unstable, and they're using that to smear this broader social movement that is really separate from that issue. So we were never going to stop on the 23rd, even though it's just 3 days after this had happened. The mayor wanted us to stop all protests until after the funeral. However, on the flip side, whenever someone from our community is murdered, the cops are never told cease all activities or cease all murders until the funeral happens for this individual. Mm. The two issues are separate, because our movement is demanding an end to police violence, to misconduct, and demanding accountability to the people, and that was separate. So for us, it was really important to continue, because if we stopped, then that would set the tone for the movement going forward.
One perhaps underrated aspect of these protests in New York is the direct action aspect. The NYPD has a terrible record of restricting free speech and, you know, mass arrests, like you were speaking to. Can you talk about the sort of actions that have been happening and how this movement has really changed the culture about what is and isn't allowed?
Yeah, so all these protests have been really, really different, mostly because in the very beginning, the mayor said, you know, to take a hands-off approach, the NYPD to take off a hands-off approach. And that was because the NYPD does have a track record of infringing on the legal rights of protesters. That during Occupy, there were a huge, huge arrest, unconstitutional arrest against protesters. So there was that aspect. And also in late November, on November 20th, Akai Gurley had been shot. And that was just days before the non-indictment of Darren Wilson in Ferguson. So there was a lot brewing in New York, and they were told to be hands-off. So protesters were able to jump concrete dividers to get on the FDR, shut down the West Side Highway, go across all these different bridges. In allowing people to do that, people have gained this confidence and this ability to strategize in the streets really last minute against, you know, just maneuver the police. So now that we're out in the streets all the time, everyone's expecting a surge into the streets. Like, why aren't we out there? Like, we need to be out there. Like, people are really not afraid to push the limits of what we can do, which has been different from the past. Where in the past, it's like, you know, we need to be mindful. Like, we might get arrested, so we need to, like, you know, figure out what to do next in like a more cautious way. Where now it's like, okay, we need to think about how are we going to push these limits and be creative people are doing die-ins in stores. You know, people are doing sit-ins at intersections and thinking about locations that might be significant. So it's definitely pushing. People are thinking now also not just being in the streets, but different forms of civil disobedience that really can disrupt New York.
The police department staged multiple protests of their own against Mayor de Blasio in the past 2 weeks. Can you talk about the differences in media coverage between their actions and the actions of the peaceful protesters?
Yeah, so in terms of the difference in the media coverage, whereas for the 23rd, we had to be really mindful of ensuring that it was peaceful and making sure the groups and the organizations with us had that orientation of maintaining it, being peaceful so that the media would not paint us as these violent, disrespectful protesters. The cops didn't have to worry about that. They were able to turn their backs on the mayor at a funeral. The passing of, you know, their own brothers in blue. They did that, and the media didn't paint them in a negative way. You know, they were justified in what they did. And it reminds me of a chant that has been said in some of the New York protests. Who do you protect and who do you serve? I think it's just that the media having the backs of the police just highlights that question, because the police are not here to protect and serve poor working people of color in New York. They're here to protect and serve property, the 1%, and the media are in the pockets of, you know, is run by the 1%. So when it comes to these situations, like who gets painted differently in having their protest, the cops definitely are painted in a positive light, being justified because one of their own was murdered.
What are some of the plans moving forward with actions and activities in New York?
So moving forward, the focus is to get all the people who are in motion right now into organizations and continuing the movement to know that it hasn't died out. Ferguson Action has put out a call to reclaim MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. So what we've decided to do, or like what different groups are thinking about, are not just protests, but really engaging in direct action and also thinking about how to train the people who are coming out for the first time and have been consistently out on the streets, especially a lot of young people. A lot of high school students have been coming out night after night into like the hours of like just really late at night. So how do we build skills among these young activists and really make them organizers? Like how do we speak out? So the Anti-Coalition is organizing a Flood the Trains event where it's essentially like a subway takeover. The message, we want to make sure that people in our communities, people in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, know that the movement is still going, even though it's like really cold and in the middle of the winter. So we want to get on subway cars and just, you know, connect the legacy of Martin Luther King, not as a passive leader who works with politicians, but as really a militant who had the interest of working people at heart. So taking that message on the subway and showing them that we're still in the streets, that we're not going to stop this campaign to end police terror in New York City, and just, you know, have like different speeches on trains, on subway cars. You have a captive audience. When those doors close, we're allowed to, you know, have people listen to our message and then also sign them up and hand out flyers, whatever we need to do. It's a different kind of action that really gets to train the people involved.
Carla Reyes is an organizer with the Answer Coalition in New York, and you can learn more about the upcoming actions and how to plug in at answercoalition.org. Finally, we got a chance to sit down with Eugene Puryear, leading member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in Washington, D.C., who gives us a breakdown of President Obama's end-of-the-year report and what workers can really look forward to in 2015. All right, Eugene, bottom line, is the economy improving?
Well, as always, the devil is in the details. In the most basic sense, yes, the economy is definitely improving. And the big headline that a lot of us saw right before the holidays or going into the holidays with the 5% increase in annualized growth in the third quarter of the United States. So basically, in the third quarter, actually. And the point being, these things, it takes a while for them to come out. And these are the revised numbers that tell you more and more. So it was a 5% annualized rise over the previous quarter. So I won't get into what all that means. But either way, it was a big deal for all of the capitalist propaganda, because they have been looking since the end of this crisis for anything to construct a narrative that the economy is definitely getting better and that things are happening. And so now, of course, this is all supposed to show that in 2015, things are going to take off. But I think there is a few things that are worth noting. I mean, one of the big increases that took place from the second to the third quarter was a big increase in military spending in America. I don't think I really need to explain that, because anyone who's been watching the news has been seeing what has been going on with the U.S. war in Syria and Iraq and things of that nature. And so, you know, there's different things like that, but also all of the forecasts are predicting slower growth in the fourth quarter, which is why, and to get to the bottom line, is the economy improving? Yes, but also no, right? Because the quarterly things, they just sort of show you progress as it is now, but they don't show you a big picture. But when you pull back and you look at the overall yearly growth of the United States, what we're probably going to end up seeing once the fourth quarter comes in is it's going to be something like, I don't know, maybe 2.5% or something like that, 2.4% of annual growth, something around there, which is really just about the trend line since the since the crisis, basically the global crisis, Great Recession, whatever you want to call it, since it started, that's been more or less outside of the big trough years, 2009, 2010, or 2009 in particular, right along the trend line. So what we're seeing is that the weak recovery, as it's concerned, or really what I think we should call, and what has traditionally been called in the sort of Marxist lexicon, the period of average prosperity, where things have sort of come back up to where they're growing slightly, but it's like a car in neutral, right? Like, it's not fully kicking in and moving forward. There's a number of different issues and things that are out there. So I think it's important for us to recognize that when you really step back and look at the big picture, we're still in this very low growth recovery, where a lot of the things that are happening are, in terms of job creation at least, is the issue of low-income jobs and things of that nature. And plus, we're still seeing this significant neutral stalling of the economy moving forward. So yes, in the most particular sense, but no in the most general.
So does this, all of this, does this mean that workers can look forward to a better situation in 2015?
Well, I think it depends. I mean, I think obviously there is a chance. I mean, it seems that the economy in the United States, at least, although in the world, the global capitalist economy, which affects what happens here, is in pretty rough shape. And Europe, for instance, has been on a terrible slide. Japan still stuck in a time warp there. But ultimately, I think that we can certainly anticipate perhaps there could be some changes, some positivities. Politics will bring some changes, as we saw a few states vote for higher minimum wage increases. But I think what people also have to be wary of is the way the economy works is it's not just a straight line. I mean, there's all sorts of different things that are happening. And what we're seeing with the weakness in growth here is, to a large degree, the fact that business investment, I mean, this is sort of the Marxist conception, right, of capital, you know, the investment of capital sets the whole process of commodity production and surplus value realization in motion. And we've seen business investment since the crisis, and even really from a little bit before, but certainly the crisis, be extremely lackluster for obvious reasons. I mean, profitability, even though profits have been rising, we're starting to see profits even out a little bit. So we've talked a lot, I'm sure, in different areas about how corporate profits have been rising, but that trend could be leveling out. And in the most general sense, even when you combine this profitability, a lot of which is based off of, you know, various factors, the stock market and so on and so forth, what we're also seeing is that profitability in the economy is combined, like I said, not only is it a lot of it not in the productive sector, but combined with this massive existence of corporate, government, personal debt that continues to drag on big corporations, on working people, and of course on the government balance sheets, which also has helped to hold back investment. And so ultimately, there are some headwinds in the economy that I think really point to the fact that, you know, there could be another slump. I mean, not necessarily, but I think that's the thing that we have to remember. Like, and the way they want you to promote it and these quarter-on-quarter things is everything's getting better, everything's getting better. But when you look at them, you see how it's really going up and down quarter-to-quarter and how on a year-to-year basis it's more or less staying the same, which is no real significant growth or change. And we have to look at some of the other challenges that are existing in terms of how the economy is growing that I just mentioned that could potentially lead to another downward trend. And at the very least, to make it very difficult for things to really get bumped out of neutral and into drive as it concerns the economy. So I think ultimately for working people, the most important thing to remember is the easiest way to have some control over, you know, your economic situation is to be organized on your job and in your community to fight for better wages and working conditions where you work and to fight for a better minimum wage, minimum income, workers' rights laws and things like that in the community in which you live that can help to arm you in what is a class war. I mean, very, very rich people, as we can see, have been for 40 years doing everything possible to drive down the living standards of working people in this country. And the only way to fight back is to look for the legislative tools, if they exist from a reform perspective, and to form unions and to directly confront the organized power of capitalism with the organized power of working people and oppressed people.
Eugene Perrier is with the Party for Socialism and Liberation in Washington, D.C., and you can read more of his analysis at liberationnews.org. That's all for Liberation Radio. I'm Sean Garcia. Please remember this program is available free for broadcast by community and public radio stations. You can encourage your local radio station to air Liberation Radio. They can visit liberationradio.org for details. And of course, tune in next week for more from the Struggle for Justice.
You have been listening to Liberation Radio, a weekly program from the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You can find us online at liberationradio.org to listen to past shows and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Some of what you heard during this program are Creative Commons licensed compositions. Our theme music and some music segments were performed by Six Fingers and used with permission of the artist. Liberation Radio is produced by the Party for Socialism and Liberation to help build the struggle for socialism in the United States. The PSL is a party of activists and organizers. We are in the streets at the demonstrations and picket lines, opposing cutbacks and attacks on workers, standing up to police brutality, fighting for immigrant rights, and struggling against racism, sexism, homophobia, and all forms of bigotry. We stand in solidarity with oppressed peoples around the world resisting imperialism. We believe the crimes of capitalism call for a new kind of society, and we are committed to fighting for it. To find a PSL branch near you, see our upcoming events and learn more about how you can get involved. PSLweb.org. Again, that's PSLweb.org. Also, the PSL's Liberation newspaper online at liberationnews.org, where you can read our news articles and analysis or purchase a subscription to the print edition. Thank you for listening.